I'm Ed the Sock, and this is FU Politics on Fun, the FU Network, powered by your support through PayPal at funetworktv@gmail.com and patreon.com/funetworktv. And now, here's your show.
Still plenty of time to come and be served at the refreshment center before showtime.
For he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow, let's all say on the bus.
Hello and welcome to Mansplaining. I'm Stephen Kersner, and today, well, our topic may sort of be a continuation of last week's topic about douchebaggery. Today we're going to talk about toxic masculinity, or as I've always called it, testosterone poisoning. Those kinds of behaviors that men adopt thinking that it's the ultimate of masculinity, which are in fact harming them, people around them, society in general. So we're going to take a look at those attitudes today and deconstruct them. Our panel, Des Loreen, coming to us from Inuvik out in the Northwest Territories. Hello.
Hey, good morning, everybody.
And we've got Chris Hamilton, Illtones, MC Illtones is joining us. Hello, Chris.
Good morning.
And Paul Doroshenko, one of the leading lawyers in this country, criminal defense lawyers. Hello, Paul.
Hello. Nice to talk to you all.
And, of course, returning this week, Andrew Willis, hey!
Happy Father's Day, Big Daddy.
Thank you. All right, so we're all here to talk about toxic masculinity, aka testosterone poisoning, because I think we've all seen it. Perhaps at times in our lives we have fallen prey to it. And I'll define it as, like I said in the beginning, behaviors which people adopt because they believe those are the things or the ways men are supposed to behave, supposed to talk, supposed to think, which are in fact just constructs through media and other sources, which in the end don't leave the man feeling particularly good about himself, don't leave him feeling settled about his place in the world, don't improve his relationships, and in fact possibly do the worst. And to start with, I'm going to go to Paul. Paul, examples you've seen of testosterone poisoning, male posturing?
Oh, I mean, it's all over the place, and it's particularly, we see it in, look at Trump, okay? His whole shtick is to belittle other people, to threaten people, and to act like the tough guy. And that's the example that he's providing for all of his followers. It's a chronic problem. And as I've been thinking about this the last few days, I've been thinking about whether or not any of my behavior falls into that category. And that's been the thing that's disturbed me the most thinking about this topic, is trying to identify marginal behavior that I've exhibited in the past that would be consistent with this.
But have you found many things?
Not many, but I mean, it depends on where you draw the line. I view myself as a in touch with the world male who's not trying to, you know, force my opinions on other people. But then I'm also on Twitter engaging with people shutting down their arguments when I can, when I think they're stupid. And does that fall into that same category? I don't know. I mean, when I first thought of this topic, following up on our douchebaggery topic last week, which was great, then I started thinking about, you know, any behavior that I do that could fall into that douchebag category, even if it's just on the edge of it. And now the more I think about it, I'm wondering about, you know, whether or not, you know, the things that I do in the day, what could be classified as masculinity. But, you know, sometimes I feel like I'm backed into a corner in my job or in my relationships with other people. And I, you know, maybe the default sometimes is to, instead of stopping and reflecting on my feelings, to go to those typical, stereotypically bad male habits of just, you know, relying on sort of brute force to get through it.
Well, I would say,
does this make any sense?
Yes, it does. And
have I jumped ahead in the conversation?
Well, we have no agenda, so there's no jumping ahead. But to answer your question, I don't think that expressing your opinion and pointing out the faults in other people's opinions, as far as you're concerned, is toxic masculinity. I don't think it's douchebaggery. That's the nature of public debate. It's a question of how you go about it. But if you just say, you know, you're right because you know you're right, but you've got nothing to back you up, and you refuse to listen to other people's thing or read the things that they give you. Often I find that people will give me a link to something and it'll usually wind up proving the point I was making rather than the point they were making. But I read it just to see. So that's public debate. I think that when you constantly belittle them instead of addressing the actual issues, if you make fun of their picture on their Twitter profile or something of that nature, something that has nothing to do whatsoever with the issue, then that is when you get into bullying. And bullying is a classically male behavior. And I go to Dez.
One of the things that I found in Vancouver, is I don't experience quite so much of that toxic masculinity as I did, for example, when I lived in Edmonton. Living in Edmonton, it was a very prominent thing. And I always attribute it to the fact that there were so many males working in all male work environments. And I noticed that there was a lot of misogyny. My wife and I were walking down the street one day. She had short hair and still does. And somebody drove by and screamed out faggots at us. You know, that sort of thing was not uncommon in Alberta. And, you know, work sites in Alberta, I found men spoke derogatory terms of women and other people generally. And in Vancouver, I just don't find that. And it was really quite enlightening when I moved here. It was lovely. And it, you know, helped me get over any residual misogyny I had. But I don't see it as much as I used to. And I don't watch popular film. So I'm not as exposed to it maybe as I used to be.
Okay. Des Lorraine, examples you've seen or maybe you've exhibited of testosterone poisoning.
Yeah. Thank you for that. I think here in the North, we see it a lot. You see a lot of that. There's a really sort of like, you know, I grew up in this age where, you know, you're not seeing it anymore. Obviously, you know, it's maybe a days gone by, era gone by, but there used to be a real homophobic culture here in the North, you know, a place where, you know, if you're expressing your feelings, you know, or if you were actually homosexual, I mean, geez, man, there was, you know, life was hard, right? You'd get bullied in school. I know it was hard for people I know who have come out. And even just sharing your feelings, you know, expressing yourself. There's such a high rate of suicide in the North, even more in the East, in Nunavut, but it's here in the West as well, in the NWT, where people just keep it to themselves, you know, because they're afraid, you know, because maybe their dad would beat them or because somebody would call them out for, you know, acting feminine. And you hear people getting called a pussy all the time, like, oh, don't be a pussy, you know, don't be so weak. And it's like, that macho man stuff, it's really poisonous, man. That's why, like, this whole toxic masculinity conversation that's really been coming out in my lifetime, you know, definitely in my lifetime. It's a saving grace for people up here because people are embracing it in the North. You're seeing a lot of the artists, a lot of people expressing themselves in the LGBT community. And we're seeing Pride Days here at the school. So I think that it's on the downturn. But definitely in my lifetime, I've seen it and I've definitely been a part of it, you know, where you would say something like, ah, you know, ah, that's not cool or that didn't go the way I wanted it to. So instead of saying, oh, that's not cool, you'd be like, oh, that's gay. And it's like, wow, I've got to really train myself to not, like, where's that coming from? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I've got a friend who still says something is gay, but he then says that has nothing to do with homosexual. You know what I mean, right? And he doesn't mean homosexual, but it still uses the term for homosexual. And so it's one of those things where the word is disconnected in his mind from the impact that it can have. And I would say, can you find something else to say besides that?
Because it's designed to be derogatory and it's designed and intended to be derogatory in that.
Yeah. Well, it means something to him. It means something other than homosexual, but there's other words you can use. I always offer him other words to use because I know he's not in the least bit homophobic. But sometimes you don't realize that you can use a term that you don't mean anything by it, but it might mean something to somebody else. And if it's some terms you can't possibly know or you don't possibly know. I've said on this show about the time that I told a friend that his fiance was really articulate. She happened to be Black. I didn't know that saying a Black person was articulate is considered an insult. I find most people are inarticulate And she was so different from him as far as her ability to express things. I was surprised that she was with him. And so, but she was just so good at expressing the opinions she was, you know, she was offering, that I thought that she was, she came across as exceptionally intelligent, not for a black person, for anybody. But
the danger of a compliment that's got all sorts of loaded things behind it.
And I had no idea. So that's an example of, I'm glad I didn't say it to her, because he said to me when I told him, he said, "Oh, you know that that's an insult." I said, "No, I don't." And he said he knew that I didn't mean it that way. But that's an example of, now I won't use that term, even though I mean it in a complimentary way. I won't use it because it's a term that I didn't know could possibly be hurting somebody, but it's a term that does hurt people. So sometimes you just don't know. But if you do know, and it doesn't mean that to you, and you're not using that term in that context, still don't use it. The English language is replete with synonyms. There's other things you can find to describe things. You don't really need to use a term that could be something that is harmful to somebody else. Andy Willis.
Hello, baby.
Hello. I can say, Andy, that, you know, you're gay, because I actually mean that you are.
you know what my favorite term is pickle kisser. That's the most underused one. I love it.
I know you first time I ever heard it was when
I love
you
it.
Used
Someone
it on this
pickle kisser. I laugh
on this show. It was the first time I ever heard it when you used it, because I'm not. I mean, most men's penises aren't green and bumpy.
Can you kiss pickles and not just be labeled as gay? I mean, I'm married.
Eat for yourself,
straight,
Steven.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, what is it?
Who Shrek? Knows?
Are we talking about Shrek's penis?
God, oh. Could you imagine? Right.
So, Andy, posturing, male posturing that is harmful to themselves and people around them. Have you seen examples of it? Have you fallen prey to examples of it? Talk to me about it.
Oh, God. Honey, I'm living through it. It's crazy. I think toxic masculinity is acting on discomfort without being equipped to be curious. And I think that's like the number one, that's like for me, like the baseline for like what makes people toxic, not just men, but also women too. It's that you get this feeling of discomfort and you don't know how to act on it with curiosity and without feeling judged to be curious about it. So you just revert to judgment, the same judgment that you feel other people place on you. So that is, in my opinion, what toxic masculinity is all about. And definitely, I think almost every instance where I've experienced frustration in my life with either men or women or just anyone in general, it's really just that they're placing judgment that they feel that's being placed on them.
That's interesting. So I think if I hear what you're saying that in response to feeling insecure or uninformed about a topic, rather than asking about it, they resort to scorn, as if that places them somehow above the discussion completely. They just, you know, they just talk with scorn. They reject whatever is being told to them, rather than investigating it. They just fall back on certain behaviors that are sort of pre-programmed.
Sure. Yeah, and like, and I always like to flip it around too, because, you know, anytime I deal with like a super, I mean, I talk to a lot of different people because I'm very curious and I have a very healthy, curious mind. And I like to get to the root of people and their discomfort and where it comes from. So I think, you know, being a toxic man can also be a toxic gay man, where, you know, when they encounter homophobia, they place judgment, but they don't understand where that homophobia is coming from. So, you know, if I've ever encountered homophobia, I like to ask the person, you know, like, what's going on? What's happening? Like, where's this feeling coming from? And usually it comes down to, you know, they're in a really tough spot. They either grew up in a really tough home or in a really tough community. And, you know, there should be some compassion placed there. So I think toxicity is like 360. If someone is toxic towards you, you could be equally toxic back by placing your same judgments on them. So it's about having an open dialogue.
Okay. Chris, how about you? Male performances that are detrimental to the individual and those around them.
Yeah. So keeping with the theme of sexuality, I actually have both perspectives on this. Uniquely, I'm not only a hip hop artist, but I've also happened to be bisexual. And so growing up, I grew up in a small little redneck town on Vancouver Island. Mm-hmm. You know, there's lots of like surly men, you know, growing up in the wilderness, lots of rednecks. A lot of homophobia gets tossed around. I hung out with a bunch of people who are insanely homophobic or who were insanely homophobic. I was tossed around casually in my household growing up, and bless my family, they're very accepting of me today and have been even more so progressively since I came out in my early 20s. But I fell victim to both sides of it. So because I was in that external environment, I became homophobic as well. I threw out the words faggot and that's gay and took it, you know, to whatever extreme I needed to fit in with my surroundings. But also when I came out, because I was used to that that societal expectation that was imposed on me externally, or so I thought. I mean, most people when I came out were pretty accepting about it, either right away or progressively throughout the years. But I also did exactly what Andy was saying. And as soon as, you know, that's gay or the word faggot came up, I didn't take the time to ask somebody and figure out where it came from. I just branded them as a heretic, like right away, right? Without trying to figure out what was going on for that person. So I like Andy's perspective on that, but I've been a victim of both sides of that, or, you know, the culprit in both sides of it, not the victim. So yeah, I think that, I guess I'll just leave it right there. I guess yeah. That's all I have to say on the topic.
No, I think that to be fair, when somebody is, when you are, for example, gay and somebody is making a gay comment, I don't think that you can be looked down on if you don't say, why do you feel that way? And, you know, start approaching them that way when they're coming at you with a slur. I think people can be forgiven for judging, because you're not prejudging. You're judging what the person actually said. And I think that's a fair thing to judge somebody on. What their reasons for doing it is aside, the fact that they did it, it's fair to judge somebody on a statement that they make, in my opinion.
I'm certainly not saying it's wrong to be at least a little bit defensive when a slur is thrown at me. But to you know, immediately throw slurs back in the other direction or get overly defensive or let it affect my day too much. You know, everybody's in their own shit because they're in their own shit. And I don't know what's happened for them in their life, right?
Yeah, and you know what? You can't know that. But all you can know is that society has certain unwritten and written rules, and no matter what causes somebody to violate them, it's okay to call them out when they violate them. Otherwise, there's no disincentive and no incentive for them to change their behavior. I think that a lot of for me, what strikes me is that today masculinity, through people like Trump supporters and so on, they define their masculinity as not giving a shit about anything, about what anybody says, what anybody thinks. And there's a degree to which you shouldn't be paralyzed by what other people say or think. But there's a degree to which you should recognize that what you're saying is going to be harmful to other people, and you shouldn't wish to cause harm to other people. And you shouldn't believe that you should have the absolute right to speak that way without consequence. And that's what I see a lot of. It used to be that the John Wayne types, John Wayne was like an archetype of masculinity for decades. And people like that, it was always, as I've said on this show before, women and children first was always the hero's thing, protecting women and children, because they were perceived at the time to be societally more vulnerable than a man. And what that meant was you had to care about the fact that these people were vulnerable in order to feel the urge to protect them. And that meant you cared about other people. You cared about people who were quote unquote weaker than you are. The new, alpha male behavior is to not care whatsoever. It wouldn't be women and children first. It would be me first. It'd be you jumping into the lifeboat and taking off and leaving the rest of them to drown. And that's a really disturbing tilt in what this alpha male behavior is. Because usually those people who behave that way are people who are not themselves really secure. If you're secure in yourself and who you are, you don't need to perform in any particular way. And you've got to be really, at your core, scared of your own emotions and scared of emotions in general and feel like you can't handle them for you to decide that the best way to handle people who have emotions and express them is through scorn. So when I see alpha male behavior, I think, wow, that person really isn't comfortable with themselves. And that's the nature of what is strong has just gone, to me, topsy-turvy. It's not strong. Masculine strength was supposed to be, one of the things was, to protect those who weren't able to protect themselves. Now, masculine strength is not giving a shit and actually laughing at people who need help because of the fact that they need help. What do you think, Paul?
You know, I keep thinking about this tendency we have to say these people are insecure. They're insecure. And it's a way that we sort of can criticize them and undermine their basic sense of themselves, our concept of the sense of themselves. I think there's more to it than that. And I think one day we have to dig into that further because I don't know anybody who's really secure. I mean, I probably appear to be more secure than a lot of people. I'm, you know, a lawyer, I'm fairly successful and I have all sorts of skills and things that I do, but I have all sorts of insecurities too. And anybody I talk to, if I let them talk long enough, I start hearing all their insecurities too, but I'm not an asshole. And most of the people I know are not assholes. So I think it goes a lot further than that. I mean, it's trained behavior. It's learned behavior, right? And you've noticed, you've identified the change from the John Wayne type of basically chivalry to just being a self-centered asshole. And, you know, that is learned behavior too. That is a changed learned behavior. The John Wayne one was one we learned, you know, to behave that way through how we were encultured, including the films. And, you know, somehow in the last, I think, you know, you could probably link it back to Ronald Reagan or before when we went to the, you know, all for one and one for me attitude that, you know, we've had a change in our culture and how we teach people that. So I think it's more than just an insecurity. Yeah,
well,
go ahead.
Well, okay. I mean, the 70s were the me generation. So it goes back earlier, I think. But
I think it does. And I think it's maybe a long-term trend related to the fact that in large cities and large societies, we may be more isolated than we were as hunter-gatherers and living in small farming communities. That maybe, you know, the all for one attitude, or a one-for-one attitude, I guess, you know, pure self-interest model is just becoming more and more part of our culture and our sense of where we exist within it.
Well, I know that for myself, the only times in my history when, and I'm kind of known for speaking up, but the only times in my history when I would hear something that was off base or and I didn't speak up would be in situations where I did not feel secure in that situation. So it wasn't, you know, yes, that's a degree of personal insecurity, but it was also situational insecurity. You know, if you're in a situation, I'm just, you know, for an example, where your boss makes a comment that's off color, you're not really empowered to say something without potentially losing your income. And yeah. That I don't criticize the person necessarily for not saying something, because while it's all well and good to say it doesn't matter, you should lose your income. Losing your income, especially in markets where you know, in industries where jobs are not you know, plentiful, you have to think about your own. You know, there's times when self-interest is important, but there are ways of saying things without being confrontational. But in the moment when something like that is said to you, often you're just so taken aback and running through your head saying, you know, replaying it, saying, "Did they say that? Did they actually say that?" That the moment
is gone. It's a complex dynamic. It's a complex dynamic, and you weigh it against how bad it was, and whether or not, and then, you know, what you know of that person, and, you know, what the comment was, the context, what you know of that person, and then your own, you know, need to survive in that circumstance. And that is a very complex thing. And you'd love to say that each time you hear something like that, or you see some, you know, gross hypocrisy or something like that, you step up and do something. But a lot of us don't. You know, we had a problem here in Vancouver where police officers, VPD officers, were collecting people, taking them to Stanley Park and beating the hell out of them. This was two decades ago, but one officer stood up and said, "This is wrong." You know, a young officer, and because he hated the hypocrisy, really. He was marginalized, and I think he was forced out of the force eventually. You know, those officers who were doing it got into trouble, but the only reason he spoke up was because he couldn't take it anymore. But look at the damage that it caused him. Courage, in these circumstances, can cause you a lot of injury. And so you weigh the potential injury to yourself. And it's sad.
Yeah, and it's sad that we live in a society where we have to balance that out. What are your thoughts about strength, Andrew Willis, and the way that it's being, it's the alpha male strength that we're seeing exhibited a lot on social media, but in other places as well?
I think strength is something that comes from within, and you need to focus on you and your own actions and not trying to display that strength to other people, or feeling like your strength is something that's like a currency, like a visible currency. I think it's just, you just focus on yourself and your own intent and what it is that you want to do. That's just all I feel about that. I don't have much time for people who need to make public overtures about their strength.
The people who talk about being strong, and if you look at, as Paul mentioned earlier, if you look at Trump, he talks about strength and strength and strength, yet this is a person who can't face somebody to fire them. He does it while they're on an airplane, and he does it over Twitter. That's not strength. You know, and when he faces dictators, he curries favor with them, and that's not strength either. So those that talk a big game about strength usually are doing so because they're afraid people are going to perceive them as not being strong because they don't see themselves as strong. So they have to talk a good game.
Yeah, I think, you know, you need to start your growth by asking yourself, why am I angry? The answers, I think, will inform what you need to change in yourself. And I really think that, you know, it's as strength is something that people think comes from anger. And it does. It really does. Like, anger can really inform a person in a positive way if you use it in the right way. And you look at, like, okay, what is it that I'm angry about? Why am I angry about seeing two people walking down the street with long hair that could be gay? It's like, why does that piss me off? Is it because I'm angry with my father because he used to beat me and he used to call me a queer, or he said I was weak, or my mom wouldn't jump in and stop when, you know, people were fighting in the house? Like, I don't know, like, what is it? Like, you know, so look towards your anger, but, you know, before you act on it, look at how you can use it to strengthen yourself and improve yourself and inform your decision-making, your decision-making.
So I think what you're saying is that strength isn't going with the flow. Strength is taking stock and doing what you think is right, despite the fact that there may be consequences.
It's like everything. It's all about assessing the landscape and figuring out where you're placed in it, and then just going to the edge and letting the world reorganize itself around you, and not standing around waving a flag saying, here we are, this is where we need to be. You just need to go somewhere and let your actions dictate the surroundings around you.
All right. What about you, Chris? What are your thoughts?
Well, there's I'm just keep thinking, pardon me, there's the age old anecdote that boys don't cry. And to me, like, crying in front of somebody is a way of opening up and becoming vulnerable. And to me, that is an example of strength. So I don't know, I cry very easily. I cry when I'm elated with joy, or I cry when I'm very sad. I cry if something's humorous enough. I cry when I listen to music, if it strikes me in the right way. And I still, to this day, feel a deep-seated sense of shame if I cry in front of another man. And but when I see another man cry in front of a group of peers, I actually see that as being an example of great strength. So to me, yeah, I just think of this as being incredibly detrimental to male development if one is to grow up in a household or in a society where they're taught that it is feminine to cry. The fact is that crying is just a human emotion. It's just something that we do as humans, and to keep that buried beneath the surface for years on end. Like, there's some men who go through life thinking that they can never cry because it's a sign of weakness. And to keep that sitting beneath the surface for, you know, years, decades, what's that doing to the human consciousness? You know what I mean?
I think what it does is it makes you resentful of other people who do express emotions. And so you come down on them and shame them when they express emotions because you haven't felt that you've been, you know, that you were able to express your emotions. So why the hell should they? And it forms a toxic circle.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I guess the question is, how do we go about reshaping the idea of what it is to be masculine? 'Cause, you know, I think the old statement of be a man I think in 2020, the statement ought to be an adult. And that doesn't necessarily mean anything to do with anything masculine in particular. It's adults behave in a certain way. It doesn't mean you can't be youthful, but, you know, treat people with a certain sense of respect, act a certain way, you know, act in a decent, responsible way as part of a society. But how do we wipe away this, I would say it's an eruption of alpha male faux masculine behavior. How do we as individuals address this on a day-to-day basis? Well, it wouldn't necessarily be day-to-day, but how do we address this in our lives in smaller and larger measure in order to try to turn the tide away from that? Paul?
Well, I think the only thing we can do is be better examples than you know, those of us who have suffered it, than to suffer it. I mean, I don't feel that I really have a problem with it, and I'm obviously attuned to the issue because I'm alert to things that could be there, but I never had that growing up. You know, my parents were open-minded and intelligent individuals who didn't speak badly of other people, and my dad never expressed anything that I would view as toxic masculinity. I understood his emotions, and he didn't hide them. You know, he's a pretty stoic guy, but I also, you know, could read it, and he wasn't, you know, making that decision to hide his emotions in any way. So I think purely, really, like, what can we really do about anything in our world that we disagree with? Well, we can be a good example, obviously, and I think that's what we have to do. Okay. And be vocal about it. And, you know, I hate to say it, you know, as I said before, being courageous and stepping up for those things comes with pain. It doesn't mean that it's wrong. And sometimes you lose, you know, sometimes you come out really at the wrong end, and at least you can look at yourself in the mirror in the end. You know, I, in those moments that I've stepped up and done what I had to do, at least I can tell my kids that, you know, in those circumstances, I did the right thing. I'm not perfect. I do things that are wrong too. But in those moments, you know, a great number of them, I think generally speaking, I've been ethical in the sense that I've recognized when I saw this type of behavior happening, and when I could speak to it, I did. And so okay. I think that's the example you have to be.
Des, what do you think?
I think it's fitting we're talking about this on Father's Day. You know, I think it's kind of funny we're talking about this on such a day that we're celebrating masculinity and you know, that sort of role models. But I will say I'm learning new words here. I like replete. I didn't know what that word meant until today. but I will say this, well said, Chris, about what you said about crying. You know, I think myself too, you know, I cry at the drop of a piano key in like even car commercials. So I definitely do show my emotions on my sleeve. And I think that a lot of people, they're not really comfortable with that because they don't see it a lot. They see it as weakness, right? So I get messages because I'm very open on Facebook, and I'll make a post and I'll say, hey, I'm having a really shitty day because, you know, I'm thinking about my grandfather who raised me, and I'm thinking about, you know, the times that we had together that I missed out on and things. And then somebody will say, you know, oh man, that's touching. But you know, you share a lot on Facebook, and you share too much sometimes, you know, you might want to just keep some mystery there. And it's like, but why though? Because I might be encouraging somebody else to share their story.
You're educating us. Some people don't want to be educated, I guess.
Well, I think you're clearly making this, what you're seeing is that person is uncomfortable with you expressing your emotions, largely probably because they don't feel comfortable doing it themselves.
And that's exactly it, right? And so that's what when you talked about what is masculinity now, what do you want it to be? I think it's confidence. I think it's being responsible, you know, like we're seeing a lot, like, you know, people, women love a dude who cleans up, right? Like you can be unfit. You can be, you know, like a bit of a, you know, like a bit of a jerk or whatever, whatever. But as long as you're doing your thing, as long as you're there for her, as long as you're showing this empathy that people just aren't showing, you know, especially here in the North, man, we have people, so there's all this aggression and, you know, they hit women, they're getting into fights constantly. They're drinking so much and they're just posing as strong. And it's like, who are you trying to fool here? Obviously you're in denial of something. So it's like trying to open them up and getting counseling, talk to somebody, right?
I think that you hit the nail on the head with mentioning empathy, because in order to empathize with somebody, you have to connect with those feelings in yourself that you have felt at times. And if men are discouraged from A, displaying emotion, or B, admitting to having any emotion, then that inhibits you from showing empathy. Because if you can't connect and let the other person know that you're connecting to their emotions by connecting with the emotions that you've felt like that in the past, then you can't show empathy. And if you can't show empathy, then really, how good are you in helping, in being a friend, being a spouse, you know, being anything, being a boss? How good a person can you be? Not how good a man, but how good a person can you be if you block yourself off from showing empathy and feeling empathy? What do you think, Chris?
I just had this vision of Tony Soprano in his counseling sessions with Dr. Melfi, I believe her name is, on The Sopranos. And it's such a, may he rest in peace, James Gandolfini. It's such a dynamic character. And that's part of his journey, is he's this mafioso boss who has to act this tough guy role. And he's really just torn up inside about it and needs counseling for his behaviors, because he really deep down is an empathic, you know, loving guy. But he has to play this role in his surroundings, being that he is a mafioso, right? So that's, I don't know why that came up for me right now, but it did. So I thought I'd bring it up.
Well, and I think you've answered this question already when you say that you cry at the drop of a hat. That is how we make other people, other men, comfortable with the notion of they themselves be, you know, embracing their legitimate emotions by showing that, you know, here I am a man and I am crying. I am a man and I am showing kindness. I am showing, you know, empathy. By doing that, we're letting the person may not do it, may not transform right away, but enough examples of that, and they start to see that the way to, because their concern is being accepted, and they'll learn that the way to be accepted is through these behaviors that they see more and more. So it's, you know, it's incumbent upon us to take those measures and to take those steps, even when it's difficult, because that's being an adult. And, you know, we all, you know, people talk about celebrities and sports stars and stuff as role models. The fact is that they are role models to a degree, but the people who affect our behaviors more directly are the people around us, our friends, our family, our coworkers, and we're around them a lot more than we're influenced by or receive the influence of those people who are, you know, celebrities on a different plane of existence altogether. So if
absolutely.
Yeah, if we exhibit those, if we as individuals open up and start to show that it's okay and the world doesn't end, then that's, I think, the contribution that we need to make as men toward a different understanding of masculinity. Because there was a time, I remember when in the 70s, when Alan Alda was the woman's lib poster boy because he was so sensitive. And then it swung the other way again. And I don't want it to swing all the way the other way. I want it to sit in the middle. Which is where most things are reasonable. So I guess what we're saying is that what is masquerading as alpha male strength these days is actually weakness. And what alpha males today see as weakness is actually strength. And it's just a matter of us as men living those examples, living true strength and showing kindness, showing empathy, showing the ability to relate to the people, expressing your emotions when you have them rather than bottling them up, which is just, you think about the number of psychological problems that are caused by men not feeling that they can show their emotions, that they can't show when they're struggling, they can't show any sign of vulnerability. It leads to suicides. It leads to so many things. And male suicide rates are ridiculously high. And I think a large culprit there is people feeling like they need to bottle stuff up. Because if they let it out, then they feel bad holding it in, but then they let it out and they feel bad for being vulnerable, and they feel they give themselves hell for it. So it's a trap that men are stuck in that we need to help men get unstuck from. That notion that being a man means being an asshole, quite frankly, that's not being a man. That's just being an asshole. So I want to thank you guys. I think we've covered the topic. I think there's a lot there to think about, and I appreciate all of you bringing stuff to the table from your own experiences and so on. Andy Willis, people can find you at andylandradio.com. Oh, wait. Hang on a sec. Andy.
Yes.
Yes. People can find you at andylandradio.com.
You bet.
All right. And I encourage people to check out Andy. He's quite a personality. Paul Doroshenko can be found on Twitter at Paul Doroshenko, spelled like it sounds.
Exactly. That's correct.
And Paul has always encouraged people to tweet to him, not just for his legal acumen, and that's the name of his law firm, but also because he's a country music star. So check out his stuff through follow him on Twitter and check out his stuff on YouTube. Des Loreen, who does, I think you do numerous podcasts, don't you, Des?
Yeah, I've got a whole bunch of stuff going on. So now I just direct people to my website, desloreen.com.
And that's L-O-R-E-E-N. Thank you, Des. Thanks for joining us. Chris Hamilton, otherwise known as Ill Tones, an MC, is it rap performer? I saw like an old white guy. Can I say rap performer or do I have to say hip-hop?
You could say hip-hop artist or MC. Either or works for me. I'm not going to hold it against you. As long as you don't call me faggot, I'm fine.
I don't think I've ever called anybody that. okay, and people can find you primarily on Facebook, right?
Yeah, facebook.com/illtonesmusic, instagram.com/illtonesmusic, youtube.com/illtonesmusic.
All right. And that's it. I'm Stephen Kersner. You can find me at Stephen J. Kersner, Stephen with a V, on Twitter. And I admit, I don't do much on Twitter under my Stephen J. Kersner account, but maybe I'll start doing it if more of you tweet to me. And we do like to have feedback for this show. So please, if you've got things you want to add to the discussion or discussions you'd like to see us tackle in the future, please suggest them. And please, we're bucking the system here by providing programming that is connects to people on a human level, rather than coming from the top-down, you know, big media approach. We're having conversations that need to happen, essential conversations between people who are regular Canadians, not paid political pundits or people with an agenda. This is a channel that puts programming out there for you. That's what FU stands for us and for you, as well as the attitude of FU to the big guys. So we're bucking the system, and we need you to help us buck the system by giving us a few bucks. If you can become a patron, you go to patreon.com. It's a subscription service. Starts at $1 a month. Really, just $1 a month. Give us a buck, $5, whatever you can afford. That's patreon.com/FU Network TV. Or if you want to give us a one-time boost, that's also very appreciated. Do that through our email address at funetworktv@gmail.com. We really, really do appreciate all the support you give us. We want to keep going and growing, and you guys are an essential part of that. So for Paul Doroshenko, Des Loreen, Chris Hamilton and Andrew Willis, I'm Stephen Kersner. This has been Mensplaining on Fun, the FU Network.
For he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow. Let's all say on the bus.
This is Fun, the FU Network.